Cubs down to their last strike as Hayward swings and misses, and this ball game is over.
No, that was excruciating. I wasn't even there. I didn't have that sense of connectedness or socialization. I just had the misery of sitting there watching on television. Yikes. That was a radio call that you hear on the score. Sadhav Sharma follows the Cubs closer than maybe anyone, and he is on Twitter at Sadhav Sharma. He is the beat writer for The Athletic, and he's on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park, or at apnissan.com. So, Sadhav, how are your son's nachos?
Yeah, I think that was the peak of his day. But I mean, just a difficult game to watch. I think for anyone, it doesn't matter how much you love the game. I love baseball quite a bit, but that's exactly what Theo Epstein is trying to fix, that game right there. Way too many walks issued, way too many strikeouts by the Cubs, just long and plodding, not a lot of action. I mean, I love baseball, but that was tough to cover. That was tough to cover, and it shouldn't be how the game is played.
You're right about that. And even going as a fan, you could feel that when I was sitting in the stands. To you, what was the most concerning? Was it the early exit by Kyle Hendricks? Was it the Cubs' lack of offensive anything? Was it the way they faced the bullpen for the Pirates? Was it the fact that it was the Pirates? What's the number one problem you had with this game?
Yeah, I think just the offense as a whole should be a concern, not because it's one game, but because we've been watching this for years now. Swing and miss has been an issue. Lack of contact has been an issue. Inability to generate runs. I guess you could say, hey, that all three runs were scored by a sacrifice fly. That's a plus there. Hey, they don't do that very well. They usually rely on home runs. They can't string together hits or manufacture runs in a way. So take that as a positive. But, I mean, two hits, just swinging and missing at a lot of breaking balls away by righties. I mean, Wilson Contreras, I can picture him swinging and missing at a slider in my head right now. That was frustrating to watch. That's the same stuff that we've been seeing for years now. The other stuff, Kyle Hendricks, I don't know why anybody would be concerned. It may not be what you see on opening day from him, but this happens every year. He gets a little out of whack with his mechanics. Sometimes it takes 2-3 starts. Sometimes it's one start. But he's going to lock it in. I'm sure of that. Unless something is physically wrong, he's going to be fine. The bullpen, I'll just keep my eye on that. I like a lot of the talent here, but like I wrote yesterday, a lot of that talent, they have struggled with control in the past. So if they all are struggling at the same time with control, there's going to be rough patches. But these guys can lock it in. I've seen them all, except for Dylan Maples, I guess, in the big leagues, I've seen them all dominate at times. These are guys that can almost all of them be high leverage relievers. So I'm not too concerned about the bullpen, and I'm not concerned at all about Hendricks. But the offense, I don't know how you can be optimistic about this offense in general. It's hard.
It's the same people. And I don't know if I can do this again, Sahadev. I don't know if I can do the hope they draw walks or hope someone hits a home run and just sit there and bleed out my eyes with runners in scoring position. It's the same thing. If this is going to be the same thing, it's going to be really difficult. And we always say, don't lose. Extend this guy. Extend everybody. Keep everybody here. Well, then maybe we're just going to get more of the same.
Yeah. I mean, I understand wanting to extend Anthony Rizzo. He's what we talk about as far as what the Cubs need, right? When he's right, he's going to put the ball in play. He's going to hit home runs. He's going to take a lot of walks. He's kind of that, he's not the elite tier of what you're looking for, but when it comes to batting average, on base, and slugging, he does all three, and he's a really quality, high-level player. So, I mean, yes, extend Anthony Rizzo if you believe that he can keep doing that into his mid-30s. The rest, there are questions, legitimate questions on offense. I don't know. I 100% agree with you. We've been talking about this for years, and it's really hard to just keep saying, it'll come together. Look at the names on the paper, though. Those are quality names. And that's true. I think that every once in a while. I look at the roster, and I was like, this should be a good team, right? But for some reason, we've talked about this to that. The offense just doesn't work well together. I know they replaced Kyle Schwarber with Jock Peterson. I think that is a slight upgrade in certain areas. I just don't, I mean, I don't think any of us believe that's enough. A lot has to go right for this offense to kind of click and coalesce. I don't know if it will. I'll say it again. I like the talent. I'm probably individually, I like a lot of these guys. I just don't know. I don't know if we're going to get anything better than what we've watched the past few years.
And that's the real concern. I looked at that bottom of the fourth inning, Zahadev, as such a good example of what just went wrong. Dwayne Underwood comes in the game, which is a problem in and of itself, that the starters exited after three. Then you have Javi Baez strikes out swinging, works a nice at bat to seven pitches, but he swings on a changeup. Then Jason Hayward strikes out swinging for the second out. Then David Bodie strikes out swinging on a curveball. You had Dwayne Underwood strike out the side of Baez, Hayward, and Bodie.
Yeah, you know, I've always liked Dwayne Underwood talent-wise. I understand why they moved on at this point. There were probably some other guys that I could have seen that made more sense to move on from. But yeah, that exposes multiple weaknesses with this organization, right? We can complain about the lack of pitching development because Underwood, when he was drafted, high ceiling guy, probably should have moved him to a reliever earlier on than they did because they really pushed hard to make him a starter. And he just wasn't, it just wasn't clicking. A guy wasn't going to be a starter. Now, I had a scout tell me 2 or 3 years ago, like, hey, put this guy in the bullpen. I think he plays up. It's taken a little while. Maybe that's just one outing against a team that strikes out a lot and he looks good. I mean, there were outings where he looked good last year too, but I have concerns about his fastball and fastball command. My thought was when he came in was if these guys can lay off his breaking balls or his off-speed pitches and just sit on a fastball, and crush it, or just sit on the breaking ball and assume he can't throw a fastball for a strike, that could work. But obviously their game plan didn't work against Underwood. I like Underwood. I think he could be something good if he can harness his command a little bit better because his secondaries are pretty nasty.
It was shocking to see all the walks that were issued, and it may be just a blip. I mean, usually my answer for why something happens is generally baseball's weird and variance, but the number of leadoff walks that were issued, it's not a function of the pitches being called or some kind of plan, is it? Was that just something that happened?
Yeah, I think, I mean, those were some non-competitive walks at times, right? They weren't close. Kyle Hendricks isn't going to do that. I mean, 2 years since he walked three in a regular season game, he doesn't do that. That's not Kyle Hendricks. So I don't expect that to be an issue. But the rest, I mean, you look at these names, and these are guys that can walk guys. I mean, Brandon Workman is curveball. They weren't swinging at his curveball. That's a concern for me. If that doesn't get right, then Brandon Workman is what he is last year. Because the reason he was bad last year is because his curveball was a mess, and the Cubs know that. Brandon Workman knows that, and they've been working on it, and it looked a lot better in the spring. It didn't look bad, so to say, but I don't know if they were seeing the pitch out of his hand or what, because outside of a single that he gave up on the pitch, they didn't even think about offering. I was paying particular attention to the curveball, and nothing was happening with it. You know, the other guys, I mean, you can talk about, I mean, I think about Jason Adam and Andrew Chapin, those are two guys that when they're locked in, they are probably two of the better relievers in baseball. When they're a little off, they're going to be maddening for fans. I mean, they haven't watched these guys enough. Cubs fans haven't watched these guys enough, so they may not know, but they can be maddening, and they will be maddening at times, but they can also be dominant. So I wouldn't judge either of them off just one outing. I also think Adam's pretty darn good. I think he can be a dominant reliever. He's got multiple pitches. They all seem to work well. For some reason yesterday, the stuff wasn't, he didn't use his breaking balls as much and his fastball was down. Maybe it was the weather. But I know that guy has the type of stuff and has gotten some results that make me think he can be a pretty elite setup guy.
But when you look at it as a whole from yesterday, there were problems that came together pretty consistently for the Cubs. Like, for example, the Pirates led off innings with a walk in 7 of the 9.
It's completely unacceptable. I think that's something that David Ross touched on as well. Just the getting guys on base right away, I mean, that puts you in a defensive position, right? The pitcher is on their heels. They're overthinking everything. There's men in scoring position almost immediately, too. I think the first two batters got on, like the first, like five of the first six innings, six of the first seven innings. That's a mess. You can't, how do you, I don't even know. Like that was, this is why I said this is one of the most brutal opening day games I've seen in a while. It's rough that this is opening day instead of, you know, the middle of May or something like that, because we put all the more focus on it, because that's, we've mentioned so many things and we could just go on and on about how this is a major issue or this was really ugly or this can't go on, right? So I don't know how you expect to win a game. And the fact is they were a big swing away from winning that game, right?
They always are, though. That's the story of the Cubs. That's part of the torture, is that sometimes they get the big swing often enough to remind you that they're always a big swing away. And unfortunately, yep, that's sort of how, by design.
Well, I agree with what you're saying there, but to be able to be within one big swing when you've struck out 13 times and walked, was it 11? 11 batters. That is kind of what is going on. Like, how this is just weird baseball and odd to watch. And I don't think it's going to happen very often where they walk that many batters and you're thinking, hey, they're still in this. It sure didn't feel like it throughout that game. They had two hits. Those were probably two of the three balls that they struck well all day. They looked, even defensively, they looked a little sloppy. I don't know. That was just such a hard game to watch to open the season with. I feel bad for fans that have been waiting for baseball for so long, especially the ones that wanted to get into the ballpark for the first time in such a long time. It was just not anything anybody wants to watch.
Well, that's one of my main concerns, Sahadev, is I know the idea of living and dying with one game is silly, but what happens when you have this game against a team that isn't one of the worst in baseball?
Yeah, they suck. That's important you point that out. That team could lose 100 games, and they just strangled the Cubs. And look, if the Cubs lose this series, what are we saying?
And I know the Dodgers lost to the Rockies yesterday, but this is... this is it's important given what we've seen out of this team.
No, you're right. I mean, the Dodgers versus Rockies, throw that one. I mean, they just won the World Series. They added the Cy Young Award winner to their rotation. Nobody should be concerned about them. There was negativity coming into this season for the Cubs, and it's not unfair negativity. I don't think they're going to be as bad as the Pirates. I think the Pirates over under for wins was pretty embarrassingly low. They're going to be drafting number one this summer, and there's a good chance that'll happen again next summer. It's a bad team. If they lose two out of three or get swept in this series, that's an embarrassing start. They've done it before with an embarrassing start, and you know, just 2 years ago. So we've seen ugly starts before. I believe that they, even if they get off to an ugly start, they could bounce back. But I also don't, you know, a 500 team come July is one that Jed Hoyer is going to be aggressive with as far as selling off at the trade deadline. The question there is, who's going to be worth anything? You need to make sure that, you know, Chris Bryant is hitting or Craig Kimbrell's locked in as a closer and really dominating if this is going to work out in the long term. Because if fans are looking for a reset type thing, they're going to want these guys that Jed Hoyer has to move at the deadline to start delivering.
I'm trying to talk myself off any kind of ledge. You're not helping me. I count on you, Sahadev, for reason, for your sage wisdom. We climb the mountain to reach you sitting atop it in the lotus position, and then you give us these, you know, these sort of sphinx-like Zen cones and riddles to make sense of our baseball world, and you're right here with us.
Well, I'm sorry. I sat through 4 hours of some of the worst baseball I've watched yesterday. It was really hard. I was really annoyed by it all myself. So I'm trying to, you know, it is one game. Let's not forget that. Like I said, Kyle Hendricks is probably going to end up with like a 3-1 ERA or something like that, and make however many starts he can make in this weird season. But it's... how can you not be negative after yesterday? I don't know. Like, it's just impossible. It's just not even about the Cubs anymore when you watch that type of game. You want to yell at everyone that's caused these problems and led to this type of baseball. This isn't how baseball should be played. Just a plodding mess to watch. Nobody wants to watch that.
24 strikeouts, 9 pitchers by the Cubs. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. Or 8 pitchers, sorry. But still.
Yeah, we're still recovering from it. And the White Sox didn't help. It didn't help our mood any. But Sahada, appreciate your generosity with your time as always. Have a good weekend.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
that's Sahada Sharma. We're already there. It's April 2nd. We're a game in, and we're at our wits' end.
He's so funny. He's so good at being so funny. And like, he's like, that was terrible.
Yeah, you can't argue with him. And also, the White Sox did something off the field that was kind of questionable that I think we need to talk about. It was a little uncomfortable, and I think some people were right in calling them out on Twitter and elsewhere. We will get to that next on Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
In terms of that clubhouse, boy, it's a strong group in there. It's a strong group in there. Eloy's going to be missed. He's going to be missed by you guys. He's going to be missed by his teammates. He's going to be missed by the coaches, the fans, certainly. But that's a strong group. That's a strong, well-bonded group. Got a lot of other personalities in there, too, who are going to help keep it light. And they're focused. They know the job got harder. They know the road ahead got a little harder today. But that doesn't make any of them less determined or less focused on still achieving our goals.
You're a bad man, Jordan. But
oh my God, this is perfect.
It got weird yesterday. It got weird for a while. R.I.P. Aloy was trending on Twitter because the White Sox had like a memorial service for him with the jersey and the batting gloves. He's not dead. He's just hurt. He just can't play for a while. What are you doing, especially there? You're in Anaheim. They actually had 2 pitchers die recently. They had actual memorial services. Tyler Skaggs died of an overdose because a guy on the team gave him fentanyl. And Nick Adenhart died in a car crash. And Eloy Jimenez tears a tendon, and they're giving him the full-blown shiva. What are you doing?
It was a muscle, Dan.
Oh, sure. But what? That was really uncomfortable.
So I started noticing this trend in college athletics a few years ago. When a player would get injured, another player would wear his number to honor him or respect him. And I even thought that was a little somewhat dramatic. Like, I get it. I'm not going to question your like brotherhood, but we can over-tribute at times as a society, really. And then I saw that Jose Abreu was wearing Aloy's red batting gloves as a tribute. I felt like that was in the same lane. But that is something you do if a player has passed away. There are some bad memories for a lot of Angels fans in that ballpark when they had to deal with that.
And if you're Aloy, you're watching that. It's like the end of Huck Finn when he's attending his own funeral. I mean, it's just got to be really awkward to say, I'm right here. You know, you can text me. Just call me. I'm okay. I'm right here. Everything's, I'll be okay. I'm allowed to recover. I'm only 23 years old. I'm going to be playing again at some point. You know, it's just really, really awkward. And it's not necessary. Like, for whom is this audience? Was it Lonnie Walker on the Spurs? He broke his wrist and they're doing all this Twitter stuff about like memorializing where we remember you, Lonnie Walker. We're thinking of you. We're supporting you. And even he said something on Twitter like, this is a lot for just an injured wrist.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about before the show. When people brought up Lonnie Walker and then he tweeted all this for a wrist, I almost said RIP my damn self. Like, he knew it was weird. Because the Spurs were like, rest up, Lonnie. Like, nobody's questioning how bad the injury is. Nobody's questioning how much you miss Eloy Jimenez and his effervescence on a team. He's the best at that. I can understand why a strong reaction out of Eloy in his everyday life would lead to a strong reaction of not having him around. But he's not dead.
No, he's not. He's here. He's fine. He's going to have surgery, and they're going to fix a torn muscle, and then he's going to start playing baseball again. But it just had to be very, very odd to be on the other side of that. And I know they've done some like retirement tributes to somebody, and they do the videos. And I remember like Robin Ventura years ago did a hilarious thing for Mike Lavalier, Spanky Lavalier, when he retired. And that's all in good fun. But it was so somber and earnest, and just the whole thing was just kind of full of water when it didn't have to be. Right?
No, it did not.
And who's out today? Bill on Capitol Hill is here. Bill!
Salam, Janamis. How's the empire?
For some people, the seats are getting a little hot, and it's fun to watch.
It's awesome. And by the way, I appreciate the Tom Sawyer reference, but that one smacked the
that's right. It was Tom Sawyer, not Huck Finn. You're right. It was Tom Sawyer.
Yeah, but it smacked. In any case, it smacked of Bring Out Your Dead from the Holy Grail, right? Like, I'm not dead yet. No, you are. You'll be stone dead in a minute. I'm feeling better, right? It's just, but speaking of big wet things, you brought up the big wet manager of ours, and I'm sorry to say this, but I agree with both of you that, like, yes, of course, it's 162 game season, but don't step on our psychosis. The problem with a guy like Tony La Russa is he's such a polarizing and awful human being that he doesn't give quarters, so he can't expect it. And secondly, you know, the whole argument for him down through his career, even before he became a drunken old coot, is that he was the details guy, right? He was Mr. Accountability, and he was the guy. You remember this SI stories about him with the A's, where he even used a computer to do lineup cards, right? So you don't get a margin of error on stuff like that. But more to the point, to your point, Dan, you were talking about the structural problems that we're looking at. Even though I hate it, I've come around to the advanced understanding that stealing bases is not good unless you can get away with it. So why is he even greenlighting all these stolen bases? And then second, you know, how he's not, as you say, he's not allowed to miss that 20 seconds. He's Tony Damn La Russa. So, you know, I admit my own bad faith here. Even if they win out the rest of the season and sweep to the World Series, I want him fired. But it's just the heaviness of his hiring, sort of, it's going to come back time and again, and we're just going to be stuck with this. And, you know, as long as he doesn't drive Eloy home, I guess we should give him a break. But, like, I'm already, you don't give quarter, you don't get it. Be safe. I'm about to get my vaccine, so tell my mayor if she wants to kill me, she's got 15 minutes or she'll have to come up with something else. Be good, guys.
Attention,
yeah,
Muriel
Bill,
Bowser.
That's awesome.
Mayor Bowser of D.C., you only have a few minutes to get to Bill on Capitol Hill. I heard some commotion going on behind him, but that is calling from the clinic or the vaccination site. That's real stuff there. Like I
good
say,
for
you get
him.
Yeah, good for him. Like I say, you get more emotional than you think when you feel like as a Twitter follower put it, saying it's like you feel like you've survived the zombie apocalypse. Like you're in that shed with the pitchfork and the sun's coming up and the last zombie is lying dead.
Mully and I would not be around for it. We both acknowledge we have zero survival skills.
See, but that's all part of the Mully ruse. You know that he's like MacGyver because of various black ops that he's done. Are you kidding?
You know what? Mully? You're right. And I just like pretended like I didn't know and totally believed it.
That guy, he'd eat things that would make a billy goat puke. Like that he could devise, you know, traps and deadfalls and trap. I mean, believe me, don't worry. That's the guy you want to be with right there.
Also, I think Mully knows that we're onto him.
He might. So he's going to, if he changes his appearance drastically, we'll understand what's going on. The 219 texter says Aloy's hanging out with not dead guy for a few months. Is that a dead body?
Not dead guy. It's still one of the best things I've ever heard.
It was real. That's because it was absolutely real, and it happened in real time on these airwaves. As we've learned over the past week, you can't replicate the realness sometimes. We have voting ongoing in the semifinals of the Bernstein and Rahimi Tournament of Greatness, and all I can say is we have at least one game that remains close right now. We have one that is separated by about 6% and another that's separated by about 11% of the vote right now. And there's still plenty of time. We have more than an hour of voting remaining. We have the 8 seed from the producer region against the 1 seed from Layla's region. It's the Love of a Dog that is playing against Baseball. And the number 1 seed from my bracket, Bacon, is going against the 2 seed from the listener bracket, Terry Boers. So those are ongoing games. The final is going to be Monday, and that is right now at the Bernstein Rahimi Twitter feed, just that, at Bernstein Rahimi. And you can go there, make sure you expand it, make sure you vote on both games. That is the Tournament of Greatness, brought to you by Humana, a more human way to healthcare.
Let's Who's do voting for baseball after what we saw yesterday?
Right, you can't, because baseball sucked yesterday. So,
dude, I am going down. Like, I had a good run, but baseball disappointed me yesterday. I can't even vote for it myself.
Yeah, Sahadev really was. I was expecting him to just, you know, talk some sense into us, but he's shell shocked too by what he had to sit through yesterday. And when we come back, it's the midday midway, but we're going to do it a little differently because we had some opening day baseball sound in a couple of places that was just fun. I want you to hear a Boog Shambi anecdote from Marquee yesterday. And remember our old buddy Bruce Drennan from Cleveland? Oh, Valbuena! There was a great rant that we played years ago, and he's one of these outsized characters who had himself a post-game moment yesterday on local Cleveland television, where they're still taking calls on a post-game show. We're going to hear all of it next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, midway.
The midday midway.
1, 2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the midday midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
Well, we've been trying to make sense of what yesterday was, other than being a big pile of suck. But that's what baseball was, yeah. except for the better half of this show, Layla Rahimi, who I think you did a nice job describing how important it was for you and how meaningful it was for you to go to a baseball game and be around other human beings. And I think that's more important than an outcome of a game.
It is. Sports is something, it's like, it's our reward, you know, it's our reward and it's our escape. And I miss doing sports things, and it was awesome to do normal sports things
and make it as normal as it could possibly be, even though we talked about some of the bugs that are still in the system that the Cubs have admitted at Wrigley Field. They're figuring it out, and they've never done this before. So it's not going to be completely without hitches, and they're going to work to make sure that the experience is optimized as best it can possibly be with amid all of these changing rules and regulations. We also talked to Sahadev Sharma about how frightened we should be about what happened with the Cubs. Tony La Russa screwed up a challenge, and so they couldn't get to it in time because Nick Madrigal was actually safe on the steal. And there's no excuse. Just like Bill just said on the call, like you're Mr. Detail guy. You're Mr. See everything, know everything, and sharp as a tack, and fast and thorough, and picking up slack. And whatever you're doing, you have to not make that mistake. Figure out your process, make it work. And Eloy Jimenez, despite all of the memorial services yesterday, we can tell you is alive. I want to do Boog Shambi first just because I got a kick out of this, that he's going to be fun. No matter what the Cubs are doing, Boog is going to be fun. And mm-hmm. because it was April Fool's Day, I remember falling for the Sid Finch Sports Illustrated piece I remember exactly, because I was Sports Illustrated was like my first foray into sort of grown-up sports. I got my first issue in 1976, I want to say. It was the Mark Fidrich cover when my paternal grandfather got me the SI subscription. And it was a part of every Thursday. It would arrive, and I'd run down to the mailbox and grab my Sports Illustrated. So it was a huge deal when George Plimpton writes this story about the guy that could throw 140 miles an hour. And we didn't realize that the cut line of the story, the first word, the first letter in each word, spelled out April Fool's. But it's one of the great April Fool's pranks of all time. It was a pitcher who didn't exist. And John Shambi on the Marquee Network yesterday remembered his experience with that.
Fans are back. 25% capacity here at Wrigley for opening day, April 1st. That's no fooling.
Yeah, happy Sid Finch Day, everybody.
That's right. That was like right in the heyday when that article I was telling you the other day, going to high school in New York City, and the article that was, I guess George Plimpton wrote it, right?
Mm-hmm. 1985, was
yeah.
it?
Yeah, and it was... It was an April Fool's joke about this guy that threw 120. And as a kid growing up in New York City, who had to deal with the 80s Mets fans, and, you know, that article comes out, and I go to high school, and my friends are like, did you see that? We're going to have this guy, Sid Finch, and he's going to be with Darling and Gooden and Sid Fernandez. We're going to be unstoppable. And I was like, I mean, uncle.
He was from Tibet.
That's right.
He pitched with... Barefooted or one foot?
I think one boot. Yeah, there he is. Yeah.
And there's Joe Burton from Chicago who actually posed for the photos of that article.
Yeah.
Had a French horn, played the French horn.
Right after Gooden. He'll be going right after Gooden. Everything will be great. We'll be amazing. Sid Finch. Just make it stop.
And the Mets got calls, like, from the media and from other clubs, too, right? Like, well, who's the deal with this Finch guy? And Joe was actually in the Mets clubhouse. They were kind of hiding him away and building all the mystique around him. And
Finch jersey sales started to go up.
Yeah.
And Mel Stottlemyre would see Gooden and say, how'd Finch look today? Oh, man, he was throwing great.
That one just a little bit low. Yeah, Moran will take his base. I bet you there's somebody out there that has a Sid Finch Mets jersey.
It's so good.
Gooden and Darling. Oh, God, yes. He's clearly a Yankee fan growing up. He grew up on Roosevelt Island, which is... that's got to be an interesting existence growing up, having to take the tram to get on and off Roosevelt Island every day, although I don't know if his high school was actually on the island there. What was the movie with Sylvester Stallone and Billy Dee Williams and Rutger Hauer? Nighthawks. That's where the terrorist attacks the Roosevelt Island tram there. But if this is the kind of thing we're going to get from Boog Shambi, it's going to make Cubs baseball palatable.
Oh, I absolutely love it. And speaking of the Mets, did you see the tweet from Jerry Blevins that was hilarious?
No.
It's so good because their game was postponed. He goes, BTW, I made the only opening day start for the Mets. 9 a.m. this morning, Port St. Lucie, suck it to Grom.
Good for him.
I love that stuff. I love, like, pitchers trolling on Twitter. Dan Heron's confession when he was on the elliptical and then Rizzo got involved is still one of my favorite of all time. Like, I'm sorry, baseball's still my one? It's still my one seed, guys. It is. It's still my one seed.
By the way, Boog Shambi is going to be joining the Spiegel and Parkins, or Parkins and Spiegel show at 3:00 today. Apparently, he grew up a Phillies fan. So, because I guess he was born in Philly and then moved to New York, right?
Yeah, I had forgotten that detail because that's when I first baseball met him, was when I was covering the Phillies. There's a lot more Phillies fans than you think.
Is that a threat?
No, it's just random.
Like we are
it's like how in Philly, there are a lot more Cowboys fans than you think. And for some reason, nationwide, there's just a lot more Phillies fans than you think. Like, you think they all just congregate at Citizens Bank Park and in the city, but no, it's not the case.
Our next piece of sound comes from Cleveland. And I don't know the right way to describe Bruce Drennan. He's 70 years old. He's from Chicago. And, you know, we had him on the show after he sort of had a semi-viral rant being mad about the way the Indians were playing. And he had an afternoon sports talk show on a small station in Cleveland in, like, the 1980s. He had done some games as a broadcaster in the early 80s. But now he's an old personality. And he does a post-game show on television where they take calls after games. I think is it Sports Time Ohio? Is that what it is? Either way.
Yeah, it's part of the Bally Sports, formerly okay. Fox Sports Network.
Got it. Well, he got into it with a caller yesterday in a way that might remind people of some vintage Boers and Bernstein post games too. So believe me, I know where he's coming from on this, but ladies and gentlemen, Bruce Drennan.
You can just simply pitch around Ramirez, keep walking him, don't give him anything to hit. The next guy, the good pitcher's down the middle, he won't swing at, but the ball's down around his ankles, he hits the shortstop into a double play. This has been going on for 2 years.
Right. I guess you missed a lot of the games that Reyes hit in the clutch last year, huh?
No.
Oh, yeah. You're an idiot.
No.
You're an idiot and you don't know baseball. You are an idiot. Listen,
no,
you're going to tell me you are judging. You don't know anything. You don't know squat, you stupid idiot. You're going to tell me you're going to make a judgment on the season after one game in 30-degree weather that proves what an ignoramus you are. Get off our show. Fair weather idiot. All right, we're going to move on here. Didn't even have the courtesy to call me by my name.
Get off my lawn!
That escalated quickly.
What the hell and damnation? Just, I felt like I was back in a Southern Baptist church for a minute there.
Like, they call people ignoramuses.
He's the one
church?
Who went off the rails. It wasn't the caller.
Right.
No.
Oh, yeah. You're an idiot. No. You're an idiot and you don't know baseball. You are an idiot.
My guess is, just from knowing a little too well, how that goes, it had to be a regular caller, right?
There's no way, because he said, like, you haven't watched baseball in the last
moment,
2 years.
But the moment you see some names up there, it's like the wonderful story that John Greenberg of The Athletic did about Chris Ronji. And I was proud to have been able to be interviewed for that story about the wacky world and the wild world of the Chris Ronji post game show. It's very often you get regulars, and you just know when you push that button, it's going to be awful. And that's probably what happened to Bruce there. But that he was just itching for it there.
Get off our show.
What? Like, what?
You're an idiot.
I am fascinated by the TV post game that still takes calls, because we have the discussion all the time in radio about the radio show, whether or not you take calls. And man, have we had some good ones. We've also had some very reasonable takes, which frankly restore my faith in people as a whole. However, the markets where they still do this, it's like some sort of fascinating, like, I don't want to call it antique, but it's just some sort of, like, time capsule.
It's an
like
artifact.
It's like a peek into a different era of life.
It is.
To have them on the TV show, and, like, the Cardinals used to do this. I don't know if they still do. Clearly, the Cleveland station does. I think Pittsburgh used to, but I haven't seen their post-game show in a while. And you have to be a patient viewer to sit through watching somebody listen to a call on the air. Like, there's a lot that has to happen here. And that's just what makes this all the better.
You're an idiot and you don't know baseball. You are an idiot. Listen, you're going to tell...
It's also what people
think when they
envision you going off on a caller. This is the extreme of that take.
So far in the history of the Bernstein and Rahimi show, the dumbest sports thought we've had. What was it? I don't even remember what it was.
Deshaun Watson. And he doesn't... Man, we might need to revisit that. I also retroactively gave Watson the Heisman and didn't actually get it. But that happens all the time to people. Vince Young being the biggest example.
Marty in Springfield, you're on Bernstein Rahimi on the Score.
Hey, how you doing?
Great.
I don't really think that Deshaun Watson is that much of an upgrade, if any, over Mitch Trubisky.
You are out of your damn fool mind.
Seeing that
that
Matt
is
Nagy
a
is front of the show.
Bad sports thought. Put that one away. Put
what
that in a hermetically sealed jar and put that away and throw that somewhere where no one has to hear it again.
He's not an upgrade with the system the Bears have. Oh. No.
Marty, we're gonna send you away into the bad sports wilderness. So far in the history of the Bernstein and Rahimi show, the dumbest sports thought we've had. And I think that stands, despite everything else that's gone on with Deshaun Watson. We do have a little bit of breaking football news here. Ready? You got your confetti all set? You got your air horn?
Wait, stop. Collaborate and listen.
What did you say about
Dan collaboration? Dan is here with some sports news about the Bears, your favorite collaborating team there is.
All right. The collaboration is changing slightly. Got your air horn? The Bears.
Stand by.
Okay, the Bears' offensive play caller for the upcoming season will be Matt Nagy.
Why? Why? Because Mitch Trubisky isn't the quarterback anymore?
All the talk about Bill Lazor and his history with Andy Dalton and the success that he had in Cincinnati with the Lazor-Dalton connection, and that was the reason for bringing him here. And okay. All right. Well, great. Next up, Matt Miller at NFL Draft Scout, expert for ESPN, is going to give us his thoughts on all these pro days and who the Bears may take. That's next on the Score.
You're an idiot.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.